Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach Cindy Chavez here. Today is Wednesday, January the 9th, 2019. It's 4 p.m. in New York, 1 p.m. in Los Angeles, 9 p.m. in London and Sydney, Australia. Good morning, it's 8 a.m. wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining us once again for another live stream and recorded podcast of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And Cindy Chavez is here with me again. This Wednesdays are always one of my favorite days of the week because we get to do it twice in one day. We get to do the same kind of thing, the same show, different aspect of the show, usually the next chapter in a Neville book. At least lately, that's what it's been. But I always love it. So welcome back. How you doing, Cindy?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day in my neighborhood. Blue skies. It's in the 60s. It's really gorgeous. And wonderful day. And I'm always happy on Wednesday because we do the first podcast in the morning, and it's such a short period of time between, then we get to kind of continue on some of those thoughts. And, you know, I don't have that break. So it's like, it's almost like no time has passed. So all those thoughts from this morning are still fresh in our mind when we start going through, you know, the discussion and the conversation
right. This
afternoon. That's always kind of fun, especially when we have listeners that
are
chiming in, asking questions. I love that too.
And we've got great listeners.
We had a nice conversation this morning.
We did. Yeah.
Yeah.
We really did. And we have fabulous listeners. I got a question for you. Usually afternoons you're showing your video and I don't see your video on. Is that by intention? I just want to make sure that's what you're intending to do.
Oh no, my video's on.
It is.
I see my video. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting because I don't know what's going on.
What happens if I mute it and then unmute it again?
All right.
I mean, it said, when I clicked it, it said your video is off, and then it says your video is on, and I can see my little preview pane in the bottom corner, and I can see you, of course.
Well, this is very interesting because that's not what I'm seeing. Let me just try something here. Well, it didn't help. Very strange. Because when you're talking, all I see is that little thing that shows up in the corner that says that you're talking. And if I'm looking at the live stream, it's saying the same thing to me.
Interesting. Well, I'm not sure what else I can do.
I don't know. Maybe try disconnecting and reconnecting the BlueJeans platform again and see if it clears itself. So while you're doing that, I'll do our usual announcements while you're
Alrighty.
Resetting there. we usually do this toward the middle or end of the show, but I want to make sure people are aware. If you are not yet a subscriber, please do become a subscriber. The instructions on how to do this are found on the links that you can find in most of the places where we post this, both on the live stream and on our website. But if you don't see it there, just go to the homepage, loatoday.net, and you will find a way to live stream, or not to live stream, but to click on links for subscribing. And then once you subscribe, share the fact that you're doing it. Every time that you're listening to one of our episodes, you know, talk to friends or whatever, tell them that you're listening, because that's how the word gets out there. And guess what? Your video is working now. That's great. I love it.
I don't know what happened.
You gotta love technology. That's all there is to it. But hey, we got it all straightened out. That's the main thing. So
perfect.
Yeah. So we're doing more Neville today.
We
got through. We got through halfway on the third chapter? Yeah, the third chapter, I think it is.
Yeah, we're a little more than halfway through the third chapter.
Yeah. And it's a chapter.
And we've had quite a lot of discussion so far.
Quite a bit, yeah. In fact, we were getting a discussion after we're done with these podcasts. They get posted on YouTube. And Didi is back. She was commenting in extensive detail on YouTube, which was great to see. She had some very detailed stuff to share. So anybody get a chance, go to our YouTube channel and you'll see what Didi had to say. If I can, I'll try to grab some of her comments and pull them over. But very, very in-depth, very well thought out stuff.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that these first 2.5 chapters that we've gone through so far have covered so much ground. I mean, it's really very deep stuff. But where we left off this morning, I thought it was really interesting. I went back and read it again because it's talking about floating.
Yes. Yes.
where where Neville gives his instruction on, really on meditation, but I had never heard this instruction from him before. All different kinds of instruction on meditation, but where he's using a mantra of I am, just saying I am, over and over again with your eyes shut and relaxed body until you feel like you're floating. I thought that's really a lovely way to describe it, right?
Well, I was actually thinking about that after our podcast this morning because Louise and I went out to do some shopping. And while we're out, I usually do the driving, which I was doing. And as we're driving, we were doing some communicating, some talking, but some of the time we were just kind of quiet. And during the quiet moments, I was thinking about that whole thing about just focusing on I am. And if you do it long enough, you get into that floating state. And I'm thinking, I've not usually had a lot of success with meditation in the past, but I'm going to give it a little more of a try just working on that particular mantra just to see. Because, I mean, if Neville recommends it, that's usually a pretty good recommendation.
Yeah. Well, it was funny seeing it this morning because, like I said, one of the first mantras that I ever learned was a Sanskrit mantra, which is Hindu, which is so hum.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew what it meant. I mean, I didn't learn the syllables and just wonder what it meant. At the same time I learned them, the person that taught me said, this means I am.
That's good, yeah.
And it's a mantra that, you are proclaiming that you are your being and that you're one with the universe, that you're connected, that I am. And so when I saw that this morning, I thought, oh wow, this is absolutely, he is talking about meditation, which seems obvious to us, but I don't think there was as much teaching and we didn't have, the interwebs and everything back then in 1941
absolutely. When
he was teaching this. So I think it was probably a really interesting concept to hear to the people he was lecturing to and the people that were reading his book, because we didn't have, the world was bigger then.
Yes, right? It was.
I mean, the internet and technology, television, telephones, telegrams have shrunk the world down where we
really
now
have.
Hear people that live all over the world. We hear what they sound like when they talk. We hear about their traditions and, things that they do in their practice. And it wasn't like that when he was writing this in the 40s. So I think it would have been a different experience to hear him tell about it then.
Absolutely.
Than it is for us now. We have this knowledge that people may not have had then unless they had met someone physically or read books from another place. So
right.
I don't know. I love it.
I agree with you. In fact, I think it's significant that at the time that Neville first kind of got into this whole ministry thing, I believe he was involved in theater at the time. He was an actor, a stage actor, and a fairly successful one. And then he met this fellow, Abdullah, and Abdullah gave him all these insights, and that basically gave him the foundation he needed to launch his career. But Abdullahs weren't actually available on any street corner. It was a fairly rare situation, to find somebody like that who could share those insights with you. So, yeah, it's an entirely different thing.
I think about it now, like we not only have bookstores, many of us anyway, in bigger cities everywhere, big bookstores on the corner, as well as, the online bookstores
right.
and then the digital books where you can buy a book and have it in
yes.
your hands on a device right now. And the selection of books to read is, we can never read all the books out there, right? But think about back then. I mean, how did you get a book? The library or go to the bookstore, which I don't think they had bookstores that were a city block large.
No,
then.
No,
right?
Not at all.
So you would be really lucky.
Yes.
To grab. I even wonder about Neville's books. Like, how did people come by them? I wonder if he sold them.
I imagine he did.
Or,
I imagine merchandise was partly how he supported himself during that time. And it would make sense.
Yeah.
That would be a good way to do it. But you're right. That would not be something that a large publisher like a Harper and Row or a Scribner would have, Doubleday, they would not have taken that kind of thing on. It would have been a much smaller publication.
You mentioned this to me a week or so ago after a podcast we were talking and you were like, but Neville was an actor. And I knew that, but I had forgotten about it. And to think that his craft was acting, and look how much he's teaching us about stepping into identity.
Right? Yeah.
So it's like he was practiced at this because he played a role as an actor.
Well, he clearly knew the method before they called it the method. Method acting as a name, I think, came in the 1950s, which was toward the end of his talking career. You know, he was long past being a stage actor. But he clearly understood it because he understood completely the idea of becoming the character. That's what his whole idea is when you're doing your visioning. You're assuming the feeling of the wish fulfilled as that person directly involved in it.
Right. I think that's why we were talking about it, because we were talking about how we usually refer to them as a vignette. I think it's a very fitting word because it's a very small little scene.
Right.
But we were saying we use this analogy so often when we're teaching or coaching, and that is like, what if you were to write a very small little screenplay, just a paragraph?
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you said, well, Neville was an actor. I was like, oh, that makes so much sense.
It does.
That makes so much sense. Yeah.
Well, of course. I mean, if you're going to give public talks on a subject, you're going to, and especially if it's something as nebulous as spirituality or mysticism or whatever, you've got to draw from your own experience. So of course he's going to draw from that acting experience, and he's going to actually be teaching people or trying to teach people how to do, in a sense, what he did when he was on the stage. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense that he would do that.
Yeah, it does. Well, I'm ready to dive in. I think you did the announcements while I was trying to.
I did. Yeah. So let's go. let's go for it.
All right. So where we left off this morning was where he had revealed to us that our consciousness had the power to create, and that he used these words about that every detail in the world that we experience is man's consciousness crystallized. And we've read that from him before about that as we continue to meditate, to envision what we want, that eventually it will begin to harden into fact. And so he goes on to say, in the book of Numbers, it is recorded. And the quote is, there were giants in the land, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and we were in their sight as grasshoppers.
That's an interesting quote.
Yeah. Giants and grasshoppers.
Right.
He says, today is the day, eternal now, when conditions in the world have attained the appearance of giants. The unemployed, the armies of the enemy, business competition, are the giants which make you feel yourself to be a helpless grasshopper.
That was a big paragraph for that time, because this book was published in 1941. So the war in Europe was raging. The U.S. had not yet entered the war, but was supporting Britain to whatever degree it could, using convoys of ships going across, most of which the Germans were sinking.
Correct.
Corporations were starting to really take on a major role. They had just been through a major depression. Huge numbers of people unemployed, all kinds of hunger. The production of the war was helping to revitalize the economy. But all the things that he described there were big, big issues at the time. So we read it, it just sounds like ho-hum, but oh no, this was huge for them at the time.
Right, and if you remember the story that he told of his own personal story, I can't remember if it was him or his brother, but the story about their family losing their business.
Mm-hmm.
And how for, what was it, a year or so, he would walk by the building and he would envision his family name on the building.
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows what kind of condition they were in financially, but he's talking about, you know, all of these situations where people are unemployed, people are financially distraught, there's a lot of competition, and there's a war going on.
Right.
And I can totally see how that would make us feel helpless. There are
Absolutely.
A lot of things going on in the world right now that cause me to feel a little helpless when I see them, right?
Yeah.
So he says, we're told we were first in our own sight helpless grasshoppers, and because of this conception of ourselves, we're to the enemy helpless grasshopper. So that's a really interesting distinction there. The verse says there were giants in the land and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers and we were in their sight as grasshoppers.
Right.
And Neville's saying, well, that's why. Because that's the conception you had of yourself. And so that's what you were. That's how it appeared. That's how it all played out. He says, we can be to others only that which we are to ourselves. That's really, it's a lot to take in.
But it's true. But
it gives us the knowledge that we have the power to be who we want to be. It's within our choice. It's not someone else's choice.
Which is encouraging. I mean, in the face of all those giants, that's an encouraging thing to know.
It's very empowering.
Yeah.
Because if someone else can decide who I am, then I'm powerless. And that's where that hopelessness comes in. So it's a wonderful thing. He says, and I like this word that he uses. He says, we can be to others only that which we are to ourselves. Therefore, as we revalue ourselves and begin to feel ourselves to be the giant, a center of power, we automatically change our relationship to the giants, reducing these former monsters to their true place, making them appear to be the helpless grasshoppers.
Yeah, that would be appealing for somebody living in that time as well.
Well, just to recognize that when you have hope and when you feel empowered, then all of those things that feel daunting and impossible suddenly don't feel that way anymore.
Right. Yes.
Right. And that's why it's so important for us to have hope, because then we can move from hope to faith. And that's what this whole book is about, right? Your faith is your fortune. But when we're in a place where we feel hopeless, faith isn't even coming into play yet.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have the idea that there is hope before we can tap into faith. So he goes on to talk about this same principle. He says, Paul said of this principle, and here's the quote, it is to the Greeks, in parentheses, or the so-called wise men of the world, foolishness, and to the Jews, or those who look for signs, a stumbling block. Then in, I don't know if you have this, Walt, because it's in brackets. It says, for the Jews require a sign and the Greeks seek after wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, unto the Jews a stumbling block and unto the Greeks foolishness. But unto them which are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men and the weakness of God is stronger than men. Then he says, with the result that man continues to walk in darkness rather than awake to the realization, I am the light of the world. Now remember when you hear Neville talking about these verses, that when you hear him use the word Christ, he is referring to your ability to create. He's referring to your imagination. When he uses the words Christ, when he uses the word God, he says, that is Christ in you is your imagination, your ability to create. So I feel like we say this a lot, but it's important to understand what he's saying because it's his book.
Right. Yeah, it's true.
So,
yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. By the way, before you go any further here, I want to bring in a couple of things. First of all, Dee Dee is listening live. So I want to say hi, Dee Dee. And we're
hi,
so
Dee
glad
Dee,
that
we're
you're
so
healthy.
Happy.
Absolutely, yeah. That's great news that you are recovering so well. So thank you for joining us, and hooray, you're back. That's wonderful.
That's great news.
Colleen has a question tied into what we were just talking about. She says, when you are hopeless, how do you get hope? What's the formula? Which is a good question.
It's a wonderful question. And I love that you said, what's the formula? That's a really nice way to put it, right? What is the formula? What I can tell you is that one of the things that I always recognize when I'm in that place of feeling hopeless, because I think we've all been there, you know, a time or two, right?
Oh, yeah.
Is, first of all, to recognize that whatever it is you're feeling hopeless about, that it has been overcome many, many times, thousands of times, maybe hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of times, right? So if you're in a situation that feels so hopeless, maybe, you know, you've had some kind of medical diagnosis, or maybe you know, you've lost your job, or maybe you've had a relationship breakup and you feel like your heart is broken and it's never going to be right again. Just the recognition that, wait, has anyone else ever been in this situation and gotten through it? Yes. Right? Has anyone else ever lost their job and then found a better job? Yes. Has anyone else ever had their heart broken and then healed up from that and then found a wonderful relationship? Yes. Has anyone ever been healed of this thing that, you know, that I might be suffering with? Yes. Just knowing that, that's where a little bit of hope can come back in. And once you have a little bit of hope, I mean, that's all it takes, is just the recognition that, okay, deep breath.
Yes, right.
I mean, it's as simple as that. You know, it might not be quite that easy when you're in the thick of it, but that's my formula anyways. Number one, deep breath.
Yes.
Breathe. Breathe and make sure you're doing whatever you can to physically take care of yourself, like get enough sleep and drink enough water and eat some good food and put your feet flat on the ground. We joke about that, but really being grounded, taking a deep breath.
Right.
And then recognize, ask yourself that question. This terrible thing I'm facing that's making me feel so hopeless. And you know, it could be. It's like, I don't know where the rent money is coming from this month.
Well, she actually gave us a few details. She says, I have something that I pushed out of my life and I want it back and I'm feeling hopeless. And then she, on the next line, she said relationship. So it has to do with the relationship.
Okay. So relationship. It's like, the question is, do you think anyone has ever been in this situation before and found a remedy, right? And the answer is always yes.
Yes.
And that's where you get that little bit of hope. So just hang in there, you know, keep the faith, baby, right?
That's right.
Hold on and know that things are going to get better and that every moment is perfect. That's where you get that little bit of hope.
Your line was great.
And you can ask people. That's a great thing to do.
Oh, that's true.
You know, like a close friend.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, if someone were to ask me, have you ever been in a situation where your heart was broken or where, you know, yeah, I could tell you a story. And hey, there is light at the end of the tunnel. Things get better, right?
They do.
Things get better. Life has an ebb and flow. And when you're in that down cycle where things don't feel so great, it's going to get better. I mean, it's the wheel of life. It's the cycle of life. It's just the way it is that we experience contrast. That's
right.
What you're experiencing right now. It's contrast. That contrast will help you get clarity on what it is you really want. And the clearer you get, the better chance you have of having it rush to you. So I hope that helps.
By the way, there was a synchronicity that came through while you were doing this to show that we're really on the right track here, because you said something along the lines of, you know, keep the hope, baby, or keep the faith, or something like that. And just before that, she had typed in reply to what you were saying, baby steps. So the same metaphor being used in a different way.
That's it.
Yeah.
All right. Wonderful. Okay, so let's see where we're going here with Neville.
Yep.
Because he's really, talk about faith, that word that shows up so much in these types of books. He's really diving into the scriptures in this chapter. So.
Oh, I got to say one more thing. Colleen said one more thing. She said, I created so I can recreate something better. You got it.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. You got it. And that's a statement from somebody that has hope.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's not a hopeless statement, so you're on the right track.
Well done. All right.
Well done. Bravo. Let's see. So he says, man has so long worshipped the images of his own making. Now, this hit me hard today. I read it earlier, and I thought, we talk about this. Hmm. Man has so long worshipped the images of his own making that at first he finds this revelation blasphemous.
Yep.
But the day man discovers and accepts this principle as the basis of his life, that day man slays his belief in a God apart from himself. And we talk about this a lot, off the air and on the air.
We're dealing
with Neville, that some people might be insulted by this. Some people may feel like this is blasphemy. Yep. This is like, how dare you say that I am God? I'm not God, you know, and I understand that because mm-hmm. of the things that we're taught. Neville is saying, yes, you are. So it's, you know, it's our each, we each have our own choice to make here, whether we want to buy into the idea or not, or right. whether we want to hold on to another idea that we have. And it's your choice and that's fine. I'm not pushing anything. I just like to say, he's like, I don't believe in anything.
Well, I think it's quite that, but I understand your point.
The story of Jesus' betrayal in the Garden of Gethsemane is the perfect illustration of man's discovery of this principle. We're told the crowds, armed with staves and lanterns, sought Jesus in the dark of night. As they inquired after the whereabouts of Jesus, and in parentheses, he says salvation.
Which is really interesting. So, we've got to come back to that.
So the scripture is saying that, or Neville's saying that in the story, the people are inquiring where to find Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, they were actually inquiring where to find salvation. Right. The voice answered, I am. Whereupon the entire crowd fell to the ground. On regaining their composure, they again asked to be shown the hiding place of the Savior. And again, the Savior said, I told you that I am. Therefore, if you seek me, let all else go. Man in the darkness of human ignorance sets out on his search for God, aided by the flickering light of human wisdom. As it is revealed to man that his I am, or awareness of being, is his Savior, the shock is so great he mentally falls to the ground, for every belief that he has ever entertained tumbles as he realizes that his consciousness is the one and only Savior. The knowledge that his I am is God compels man to let all others go, for he finds it impossible to serve two gods. Man cannot accept his awareness of being as God at the same time believe in another deity. Says Neville.
Yes.
So, interesting that Neville is equating this story that we know of people looking for Jesus and they hear the voice and it shocks them and they fall to the ground. He's saying that is a metaphor of us finding out that we are actually the creator, that there is no salvation outside of ourselves, that we ourselves are the one that get to save ourselves, so to speak, that get to change our experience, that get to create something better.
And I have to honestly say, I remember that story being taught to me in church school. And I remember,
you do or you do not?
I do remember that story being told. And I remember also what my reaction was, which was, why the heck did they fall to the ground? I think Neville's explanation is a whole lot better than the church's. Because what the church told me didn't make any sense at all. This actually makes some sense to me.
I think that when I think back on hearing that story, I always thought that it must have been like an earthquake.
Oh.
You know? I mean, because it didn't make sense to me either, but I like Neville's take on it.
Yeah, it's a good take. I like it.
Yeah. So the knowledge that his I am is God compels man to let all others go, for he finds it impossible to serve two gods. Man cannot accept his awareness of being as God and at the same time believe in another deity. With this discovery, man's human ear or hearing, in parentheses, he says understanding, is cut off by the sword of faith. Remember when Peter's ear was cut off by the sword. As his perfect disciplined hearing, understanding is restored by Jesus, the knowledge that I am is Lord and Savior. So Neville really pulls everything apart and makes an allegory out of it.
He certainly does. Yes.
Always a metaphor with him.
Yep.
Before man can transform his world, he must first lay this foundation or understanding. Again, I am the Lord and there is none else. So Neville is saying that before we can consciously create, before we can transform our world and our experience, we have to understand that is the foundation, the I am part, that I am the one that does it. Man must know that his awareness of being is God. Until this is firmly established so that no suggestion or argument of others can shake him, he will find himself returning to the slavery of his former self, or his former belief. If ye believe not that I am he, ye shall die in your sins. And again, here's where we need to use the Neville glossary and remember that when Neville uses the word or defines the word sin in these verses, he's talking about missing the mark. So it's not a moral failure or an ethical failure. It is actually the same as if you were to draw an arrow on a target and miss the bullseye or miss the target altogether.
Right.
He is saying, when he talks about forgiving sin, he talks about like redoing that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I missed the target. I'm going to get another arrow. And this time I'm going to adjust my aim and I'm going to hit the target this time.
Right.
That's how you make it right. And so when he talks about dying in your sins, he's actually talking about not making it right and staying wherever you are now. So if you feel like in your life's goals, you know, in the direction that you want to go, that you've kind of missed the mark or you haven't gotten there yet, that's what he is talking about when he says die in your sins. He's staying right where you are, never making it right, never making any progress towards what you really want to be. And he says that if you don't believe that you can do it, that you are the I am, that's where you'll stay. Interesting.
Yeah.
He says, unless man discovers that his consciousness is the cause of every expression of his life, he will continue seeking the cause of his confusion in the world of effects, and so shall die in his fruitless search. And then he quotes from John 15. He says, I am the vine and you are the branches. Consciousness is the vine, and that which you are conscious of being is as branches that you feed and keep alive. Just as a branch has no life except it be rooted in the vine, likewise things have no life except you be conscious of them. Just as a branch withers and dies if the sap of the vine ceases to flow towards it, so do things and qualities pass away if you take your attention from them, because your attention is the sap of life, which sustains the expression of your life.
Yeah.
I think this is interesting. We can see this kind of thing play out in our life in ways that aren't really even dramatic. I can look back at my life, you know, years ago, decades ago, and think of something maybe that I was really interested in and learning a lot about. Like at one time I was writing a lot of music and playing guitar and singing a lot. And at that time, in that moment, that was who I was. I was a singer-songwriter. That's what I did, right? I don't do that anymore. And so I've lost my real ability to just pick up an instrument and play because I'm out of practice.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
when someone asks me what I do, that might be way down the list, but I don't say I'm a singer-songwriter, right? But it was who I was. And so when Neville talks about the branches, that's kind of what I see, is that it's parts of our life. It's talents we have. And in order to keep those alive, we have to be feeding them and using them. That's what I think of anyway.
Yeah, I think you're right.
What comes up for you when you think about that passage?
Well, actually, what's been coming up for me has more to do with what his overall approach is to describing the manifestation process. Because I'm contrasting it in my mind to what Abraham Hicks teaches. Abraham focuses in an entirely different route, a different direction on this topic.
Is there a contrast then? Is it different?
I don't think it really is. I think it's just the way that they approach it that's different.
Okay.
But I think the ultimate result is the same. Couple of pointers to kind of indicate what I'm talking about. First of all, Neville, to the best of my knowledge, never actually uses the phrase law of attraction. He uses law of assumption, but he never actually says law of attraction. He makes no reference at all to vibration that I can remember. He refers to how we are the creator and how we are hardening stuff, but I don't recall anything having to do with vibration. So that piece of theory that we often attribute with Abraham Hicks is missing.
Right.
But simultaneously, on the Abraham Hicks side, you don't really hear a whole lot over there about ideas hardening. You hear about the connection between emotion and the thought process and how one leads to the next manifestation and so on and so forth. But, I mean, the takes are so different that it almost on the surface looks like they're talking about different things. But when you realize, when you kind of play out the whole scenario and see where the whole thing goes to, it's actually talking about the same topic, just from two really different directions.
Yeah, and just totally different language.
Yes.
Because so often, and I probably even sometimes just blurt it out, but so often when I'm reading Neville, I'll realize something that he says, I'll be like, oh, it's alignment. He's just talking about alignment.
Right? Yeah.
It's like the power of awareness and the law of assumption. It's like, this is when we are aligned vibrationally, like you said, he doesn't use that word either, but when we are aligned vibrationally, with that idea of who we are, with that identity, that's when it starts to harden into fact.
Yep.
And what did he say? Crystallize into reality.
Right. Yeah.
So it's interesting to see how they're talking about the same thing with completely different words
exactly.
and ideas.
Yeah. We also have another question. Jeffrey's asking a question along the lines of what we were just reading here. He says, how do we make progress when we are stuck in our own debilitating beliefs, our own sins?
Well, you know, at some point I had kind of an epiphany about belief. And it, like most epiphanies, it's either going to sound really stupid when I say it and like, duh, or it'll be hard to describe and very oversimplified. But at some point, I realize I get to choose my beliefs. I don't know how to describe that, but the idea that being stuck in our beliefs, it's like we have a belief system that somehow we've gotten. Either we were taught these beliefs, or we assumed these beliefs because of past experience, right? Like that's how assumptions happen because, well, every time I do X, I get Y. Mm-hmm. So we always expect that every time we do X, we're going to get Y, whatever that is, right? Every time I go on a job interview, they won't hire me or whatever. You get these stories we tell. And then we have the religious beliefs and we have beliefs that are ingrained in us from what we hear when we're young and growing up. But at some point I realized that, you know, beliefs are not like, well, I have green eyes. And I mean, I guess I could get some contact lenses and change the color of my eyes, but my eyes are green and that's just the way it is. And I'm 5'2" and that's just how I'm not going to wake up tomorrow. No matter how much I focus, I'm not going to wake up tomorrow and be 5'10". Right. And I think sometimes we think of beliefs that way. We're like, well, these are my beliefs. At some point I just had this light bulb over my head, right? Said, I can believe whatever I want. I get to choose my belief. So I mean, that's my answer to that question is the recognition that you can believe whatever you want.
This is true. Yeah.
You get to decide.
I would also point out that the quote that he referred to, I don't know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines back or so, kind of inversely has the answer in it. It says, if ye believe not that I am he, ye shall die in your sins. Well, that's expressed in the negative, turned into the positive. If you believe that I am he, you will not miss the mark.
Yes.
So the answer is believe that you are he. You are he. That's it, right there. Believe.
You get to choose that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get to choose it. And I think that's hard sometimes because we have a lot of pressure sometimes from community, from society, from family, from groups that we're in, from whatever, we have pressure to believe certain things, but, or you can just like what I said, I don't believe anything. That's my goal.
Oh, by the way, Jeffrey, you mentioned something about Abraham saying thoughts become things, which is what they referred to. Actually, I think that phrase comes from Mike Dooley, but you're right. That's a major portion of what they're talking about. I just wanted to mention that.
Thoughts become things.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good.
Well, and that's, you know, That's Neville's hardening into fact. Right?
It's the same thing.
It is Mike Dooley. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So I, you know, this morning we were talking about, I was talking about some principle that I had written on my desk blotter that says that we only possess the power of an insight when we give it expression. And one of the other, you know, principles, from the same person is the idea of believe nothing, just entertain possibilities. and I think that that's a really cool idea.
Yeah.
Because when we say we believe something, and I don't mean, I'm not talking about faith really, I'm talking about concepts. Then sometimes we get very caught up in having to prove it out and having to stay with it. And if it feels like it's contrasted to something else, then we get confused about it. Oh no, I don't know if I can believe this because I said I believed that, right? Just entertain the possibility. Anything is possible. Right.
By the way, Dee Dee said something really interesting, and I was looking for the place to sneak it in, but I don't really see it, so I'm going to do it here because I think it kind of ties into what you just said. She said, I had to find new beliefs that resonated with me in order to make a permanent change. We don't have to hold on to beliefs that keep us stuck. What is a belief anyway? Just a thought we think over and over again and have decided to accept.
Yes. Beautiful. Exactly. Yes. That's right. And we get to decide whether we want to accept it or not. And you know what? What I recognize is there are things that I believed with all my heart and I don't believe them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or I've decided that, I don't know if I believe them or not. I don't need to believe those things, whatever they are. We get to make the choice. It's not, you know, we get to experiment.
Right. Exactly.
We get to entertain possibilities. We get to learn new things. And that's, I remember telling somebody that one time that they were really distraught because they believed a certain thing and then they learned something else and it seemed to them, and it may have been law of attraction, but it just seemed to them like it was in a conflict with an earlier belief they had.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a struggle for them. They were like, well, I don't know if I want to believe this because I've always believed that, and they're conflicting. And I remember saying, you know, you're going to believe lots of new things as you go through your life. You know, and at the time, I was a lot younger, but I was older than this person. So I felt like I had some life wisdom, right? But I recognized in my own life how many times I had learned something new.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to conflict with something I knew before, and my beliefs changed. What I believed changed, and it wasn't the end of the world. Nothing fell apart because
right.
I changed belief.
It's a good point. And then there's also, Colleen had a follow-up question, and it's a good one because it touches on something that I think points to this being a foundational work for Neville, that he was still kind of building his story, so to speak. But she says, don't you have to feel it in order to believe it? And she's right, because he doesn't really talk about feeling here, but he does later on.
Right. And I remember, I don't know if you were listening, when we first started the book, I don't know if I said it on the air or off the air, but I remember saying to you, I'm curious to see, because this is Neville's very first book, I'm curious to see if it's different, if he developed new beliefs, if his beliefs and teachings evolved, it would make sense that they would.
Yes.
So yeah, that's a nice catch.
Yeah, right. And let's see, we got more questions here. We're doing good on questions here today. So
awesome. Let me
bring them over to my screen here where I put my questions in, because it's easier for me to read them than to try to read them on the comments, which keep scrolling past and I can't keep up with them. Like, wait, come back. Don't go away.
That's a good problem.
Yes, it is a very good problem. You're right. Jeffrey asked, what are our most powerful beliefs as followers of the law of attraction?
Well, I think the most powerful belief is this one right here. I am.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think that's it. I mean, if we had to pick one,
yeah,
that would be it. It's the knowledge that we are the creator of our life experience.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yep.
I'll go with that.
Yeah.
So let's see. That took us through. That was the third chapter, I think. Should we start on the fourth one? I mean, we're probably not going to go through it because we take a lot of time and for good reason. But let's see how far we can get.
We can. You were saying there were questions, so I was like, we can answer questions or we can start chapter four.
I think we've I must say I missed one. I think I've got all the questions that we got, that we received.
Ready? I don't know if we'll make it through this chapter, but it's a long one, but we can start it.
Yeah, I don't think we'll get through it, but you know, like you said, we'll get started.
Okay. So the chapter title of chapter four for Your Faith is Your Fortune is Whom Seek Ye? Right. I have told you that I am. If therefore you seek me, let these go their way. That's the first verse he quotes. And the second one is, as soon then as he had said unto them, I am, they went backward and fell to the ground. So that's the same story that we just covered in the other chapter.
Right.
And Neville says, today there's so much said about masters, elder brothers, adepts, and initiates, that numberless truth seekers are being constantly misled by seeking these false lights. He says, for a price, most of these pseudo teachers offer their students initiation into the mysteries, promising them guidance and direction. Man's weakness for leaders, as well as his worship of idols, makes him an easy prey of these schools and teachers. Good will come to most of these enrolled students. They will discover after years of awaiting and sacrificing that they were following a mirage. They will then become disillusioned in their schools and teachers, and this disappointment will be worth the effort and price they've paid for their fruitless search. They will then turn from their worship of man, and in doing so discover that which they're seeking is not to be found in another, for the kingdom of heaven is within. This realization will be their first real initiation.
It almost makes me wonder who he was talking about. I mean, he was thinking about some specific people in his time. Who was he talking about, I wonder?
It's a good question. When he says up here that man's... What does he say? Oh, now I can't find it. Man's weakness for leaders. I recognize that, you know, that could probably hit everyone a certain way, with different experiences they've had. People often want someone to help them, to teach them, and I don't think that there's a problem with teachers. But it's when you don't recognize that you have the responsibility over your own life. It's the idea that someone can get that for you, I think.
Okay.
Would you agree with that?
I think so.
In other words, like a mediator between people and between a higher power.
Yeah.
Instead of recognizing that not only can you go directly to source, but you are source.
Well, this is what gets a little bit tricky about it, because on the one hand, we rely on teachers to help us work through stuff that we haven't worked through ourselves. On the other hand, he's right. We don't really want to have the teacher be the intermediary. I would equate that to like the church being the intermediary between us and salvation, or something along that line. It's not a good idea to set up a man or a person as, well, you have to get through me if you want to get to the wonderful place that I'm promising to you.
Yes, exactly. And that's the thing. And I think it happens with all kinds of teachers and all kinds of groups. This thing that causes us to want to trust someone else more than we trust ourselves, maybe?
It could be.
So I think that maybe when he says, I really actually really like this part where he says, they will turn from their worship of man and in so doing discover that which they are seeking is not to be found in another, for the kingdom of heaven is within. This realization will be their first real initiation.
Mm-hmm.
I think just recognizing that we have the power to change things in our own life by making the intention, by doing the work, whatever it is, by getting there, I think that's a real place of empowerment.
Yeah, I think so
too. Instead of, I think it's the difference between faith and wishing or hoping.
When
someone says, well, I hope this happens.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, it's going to happen, I'm going to make sure it happens.
Right.
There's a difference. There's a lack of confidence in the other. And a lot of times that confidence gets put in another person. So I don't think there's anything wrong. Of course, I don't think there's anything wrong with having teachers. I'm a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's when it crosses over the line and there's a lack of responsibility on the part of the student to learn that they can, that they have the power. It's like we were talking about this morning about that idea that, about no respecter of persons.
Right.
You know, that this isn't just for some people. That these principles and truths aren't just for some people to know. Anyone can use all of this.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
It's for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also want to note something that Colleen typed in. She said that I had another question. Scroll up. So I scrolled up, and I found what I think is part of the question. I don't think I found the whole thing. Colleen, the only part that I found that says, when he attracted his second wife, he felt every night that she was in the next bed with him. So he felt it. Isn't that the same as vibration? So the question there, I think we can address, but I don't see the rest of what you were trying to set up there as a scenario. There may be more to it than what I was able to find. So if there was more, let us know. But we could certainly address the question of if he felt it, isn't that the same as vibration? Because, I mean, that's pretty straightforward.
Right. Every feeling and emotion, every level of consciousness has a certain frequency, a certain vibration. And when we're aligned with it, that's where our vibration is.
Exactly.
So I would say yes.
Right.
And that would go for anything that you're feeling.
But if there is more to the story that we need to know in order to answer the question, give me the rest
we
of the story.
Don't know the whole
story. I'm not sure what the other part is.
All right. Let's read a little more and see where we go. Neville says the lesson learned will be this. There's only one master, and this master is God, the I Am within themselves. I am the Lord thy God who led thee out of the land of darkness, out of the house of bondage. I am. Your awareness is Lord and Master, and beside your awareness there is neither Lord nor Master. You are master of all that you will ever be aware of being. You know that you are, do you not? Knowing that you are is the Lord and Master of that which you know that you are. You could be completely isolated by man from that which you are conscious of being, yet you would, in spite of all human barriers, effortlessly draw to yourself all that you are conscious of being. The man who is conscious of being poor does not need the assistance of anyone to express his poverty. The man who is conscious of being sick, though isolated in the most hermetically sealed germ-proof area in the world, would express sickness. There's no barrier to God, for God is your awareness of being. Regardless of what you are aware of being, you can and do express it without effort. Stop looking for the Master to come. He is with you always. I am with you always, even to the end of the world. You will from time to time know yourself to be many things. But you need not be anything to know that you are. You can, if you so desire, disentangle yourself from the body that you wear. In so doing, you realize that you are a faceless, formless awareness and not dependent on the form you are in your expression. You will know that you are. You will also discover that this knowing that you are is God the Father, which preceded all that you ever knew yourself to be. Before the world was, you were aware of being, and so you were saying, I am, and I am will be, after all that you know yourself to be shall cease to be. There are no ascended masters. Banish this superstition.
Can we underline that one? There are no ascended masters. Banish this superstition. Thank you very much, Neville. I appreciate that. I really do. That's serious.
You will forever rise from one level of consciousness, master, to another. In so doing, you manifest the ascended level, expressing this newly acquired consciousness. Consciousness being Lord and Master, you are the Master Magician, conjuring that which you are now conscious of being. For God, consciousness, calleth those things which be not, as though they were. Things that are not now seen will be seen the moment you become conscious of being that which is not now seen. This rising from one level of consciousness to another is the only ascension that you will ever experience. Let's Interesting talk about- that Neville says there are no ascended masters, because it sounds like what he's saying to me is that we're all ascended masters.
Yeah, I agree with that. and I like that a lot. I mean, I was quite serious when I said thank you, Neville, because I've always thought it was a little bit presumptuous to suggest there are some people who are more advanced than everybody else. And I say myself,
this goes back
that,
to
that
the
doesn't make
no
sense.
Respect for persons.
Yeah, well, that's true. Right? That's true. Yeah. And it gives meaning to that phrase in a way that is even more direct than what he said previously on the subject, I think. Just by pointing out,
agree.
You know, we're all in that same, we're in the same boat. This is not something where, and it ties into what he talked about a moment ago, about how you don't want to have a situation where you have to go through one teacher to get to the desired goal. Because
that
just doesn't make any sense when you think about that.
And this next sentence, I think, is like underscoring what you just said about going from teacher to teacher, going to a guru, finding an ascended master. He says, no man can lift you to the level you desire.
Mm.
The power to ascend
yes.
is within yourself. It is your consciousness. It's like, if you don't take anything away from this chapter, take that.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's it in a nutshell. You appropriate the consciousness of the level you desire to express by claiming that you are now expressing such a level. This is the ascension. It is limitless, for you will never exhaust your capacity to ascend. I love that so much. I just want to highlight that and underline it.
Mm-hmm.
No man can lift you to the level you desire. The power to ascend is within yourself. It is your consciousness.
And it's a funny
yes.
thing. It's one of those phrases. It's one of those expressions that can be taken one of two ways, depending upon the perception of the person who's reading it or perceiving it. And that is, you can perceive it on the one hand as a position of victimhood. You can say to yourself, I am a victim, I am powerless, so therefore saying no man can lift me to the level I desire means I can't get there. Or you can perceive it as I am... Just as he's saying all along, I am, I am, I am. Therefore, it's not that no man can lift me there. I can lift me there. I can get there.
Right.
I don't need to have somebody else to get me there. I can do it. That's real empowerment.
Right. So it's really just saying that no man can do this for you.
Right.
Right? It's like no one else, there isn't anyone outside of myself that can change my level of consciousness.
Exactly.
Or bring me up to another level. It's just me.
And on that note, we have just run out of time, but this has been really, really good. This morning and this afternoon combined, we covered some really good stuff. So first of all, thank you, Cindy, for being the expert on this that you are. You've brought some wonderful insights to this.
Thank you, Neville.
And thank you to our audience, who are also bringing some pretty darn good insights themselves. They're making this a really terrific ongoing discussion. I look forward to carrying this on next week. I mean, my only disappointment is that I have to wait 6 days before we can go on to the next part of this. But no, this has been great.
Tuesday morning, I'll be back.
I'll be back as well.
We'll continue the discussion.
No doubt about it. We hope that you'll be back as well next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.